Welcome to Audible Insights, brought to you by the Insights Association, the leading voice, resource, and network of the marketing research and analytics community. With our host, Paul Kirch, research industry veteran and business leader, and our amazing guest lineup, we'll uncover actionable insights and creative new ideas that you can apply to your own business so you can stand out from the competition. Here's Paul Kirch.
Today on Audible Insights, I'm super excited to bring you Teray Schrader. Now, she's a director of CCOTG and Shopper Insights at Kellogg Company. She's an experienced top-performing brand strategist with a passion and drive for winning through the activation of consumer and market insights. She brings a lot of experience. She came from Procter & Gamble prior to her time at Kellogg, and she's going to bring us some great insights today. Let's welcome Teray Schrader to the show. Teray, welcome to Audible Insights.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
We're really honored to have you on. You have an interesting title. It says Director of CCOTG and Shopper Insights. And so I had to ask you what that title meant, and I think it's pretty cool. You have cookies and crackers in your title. Cookies, crackers, and on-the-go goods. It's an interesting area because, you know, our audience is primarily people in the research space. And we look at a company like Kellogg. You guys are doing some great things in terms of research. But I'm curious, what are some of the challenges that you're currently facing right now in what you...
From a research perspective, there's always kind of more questions than we have budget and scope and time for. There's always a battle between immediate needs and trying to get out and be a little bit more future forward looking. I think that from a Kellogg perspective, we actually have a lot of great tools that we're leveraging. We've recently, I would say over the last 3 years as a company, really started to lean into some experts in the field and more of a behavioral economics and the behavioral sciences space. About once or twice a year, we have the folks from Ehrenberg Bass in to kind of teach us what they're learning and share with the principles that they know. So we use a lot of the How Brands Grow type theories and processes here at Kellogg as well. So
yeah, that's great. And that obviously probably helps create some really interesting opportunities for you. Are there some areas that you're excited about that you've been experimenting with?
I am, actually. There's two, I would say, in the media space that have been really cool. And I've had an opportunity to learn way more than I knew in that area. And so we've been really leaning into digital in both targeting and in measurement. So we've been leveraging advanced targeting, looking at ways that we can do different types of A/B testing, looking at ways that we can have different messaging towards different groups that we can target online. And then the tools around measurement, I feel like, have really just developed over the last couple of years in that space as well. So it's enabled us to get much better at reading those results, those kind of digital experiments and targeting and content in a much quicker turnaround timeline. So we've got sales list studies that are able to turn around in 8-10 weeks. And then we have quarterly market mix modeling that's able to give us a good read too. So I'd say over the last couple of years, we've really been leaning into that in an experimental way, but an experimental yet measured way, right? So we can continually optimize as we're learning. That's been a pretty cool space that I've really learned a lot in personally over the last couple of years. That's been really interesting.
Do you find that is being embraced throughout your organization?
Yeah, I think especially I think the marketing people love it. I mean, it's just, if you think back to regular MMM, it's like sometimes it's a year after your campaign or your launch until you're finding out how it did and what maybe worked or didn't work. And I know back in my old MMM days, we usually had trouble getting a very granular read on digital as well. So I think that it almost feels like much more actionable and more timely feedback for the marketers. And so it's enabling them to take actions much more quickly and course correct, you know, throughout the year instead of kind of waiting for a full year's plan to be completed and then studied and then delivered. So I think that the team loves it. We have these, what they're called, the cube rooms that we've built here to every week so the teams can get these reports back on how their digital media is working. It's really became a part of the bread and butter of how we're marketing, and the organization is really rallied around it.
The name Procter & Gamble is a name that obviously carries a lot of weight in the research and insights industry, and it's a place where you had obviously gained a lot of your experience before coming on board at Kellogg. And I think when you first joined Kellogg, it looked like you were working with the Pringles division, which, hey, I'm a huge fan, by the way. But what was the transition like going from a place like Procter & Gamble going into an area where you're pretty much dedicated to food products?
Yeah, well, it's been interesting in a couple different vectors. I think one, just as you mentioned on food products, prior to coming to Kellogg, I had never worked on any food, even though back in the day, P&G did have some of the brands. Pringles was a P&G brand, but I had never worked on it. So I had worked mainly in the health and beauty space with a bevy of different products, from very, very functional categories like deodorants to more beauty, cosmetics, and hair care focused areas, but never food. Interestingly enough, I would say generally it's kind of the same MO, just with a different category. You get a lot of the same kind of need for functional benefits, a lot of the same different kind of consumer group, a lot of the same emotional benefits. If you think of, like, you know, Special K and like feeling confident and indulgence with, you know, foods versus indulgence with lotions or scents. And so there's a lot of similar common themes across the two, even though they're really different. From a research perspective, I think it's also been very different. One of the things I loved about P&G is it enabled me to have a lot of different opportunities. Being such a big research organization, there was a lot of pocket to become really deep into the topic. And even how they had, at the time when I was there, they had different groups that were set up to do, you know, get deep into analytics and deep into the sales organization or deep into the media. And then I had the opportunity of working across several of those vectors. So within a 2 or 3 year stint, you were able to get really kind of a deep understanding in one topic or area. For example, I worked in kind of our business analytics division for a couple years. So I got really deep into understanding things like market mix modeling and things like volume forecasting. And then I had another role that was focused around our sales organization. So another 2 or 3 years getting to really understand retailer needs and how to sell to the retailer and how to grow categories and how to do joint business partnering with our top retailers. And then I think when you move to Kellogg, then most of the roles are more of a generalist role. And so my role here and each of the roles I've had before it, so even my Pringles role, was kind of more of an end-to-end. So you are your innovation, your analytic, your sales, and everything in between. So in an interesting way, those different roles that I had at P&G and being able to get depth in a variety of areas actually prepared me to do really well here at Kellogg, where I need to kind of have a little bit of expertise across the entire path to purchase.
Now, was there ever a struggle coming into a place like Kellogg? I mean, you went from a place that was obviously your role was predominantly focused on research, and you come into a place like Kellogg where obviously the company is focused on selling products. They use research to support what they're doing. Was there any challenges you faced in getting people to embrace research, or was that really culturally the way it was when you came on board?
Yeah, I would say it was culturally pretty well integrated. I would say how the insights function operate here at Kellogg is generally similar to how it did on the brand side at P&G, right? If you worked on a brand at P&G, you were very integrated across your cross-functional business team. The same is here too. The only difference would be in some of these other, like, center of excellence roles or other kind of expert roles that P&G would have kind of a big group of. We have a smaller group of those. So we do have a small COE group here that kind of runs, is kind of like a lot of the bigger analytical tools. And then they also have developed ways to kind of automate these high frequency studies. So things that we do a lot, like concept testing, product testing, creative testing, like that's all ran through the solution center here. And so I think the difference is there's still some of those more COE focused jobs, but I think from a brand role perspective, which I've been in, it's very similar to how brand roles operated at P&G.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners out there, they're on a couple of different sides. I mean, obviously there's the people that are trying to do better research in their own organizations and maybe get more buy-in. Is there some advice you could give some of those people that are really trying to sell research up the food chain within their own organization and try and get buy-in from the C-suite? Or some lessons you've learned or some maybe recommendations you should give them?
So a couple things I can think of. So one is, when you're trying to set a vision, it's important that everyone sees the need to solve the problem you're setting up. And so I think where we can get in trouble here is if our vision comes across as we're trying to fix whatever job someone else may be doing. Oh, let me fix your copy program, right? Like it's not running as good as it can, versus selling in the vision of, let me let me bring you better insights that will help you develop better programs. So I think part of it is finding the right opportunity to sell that vision in a way where people see that as a enabler to them so that you can support their work and support it in a way that's going to provide, give them better results. And I think the other part is just trying to tap into what their goals are. Because sometimes I think one of the probably the bigger criticisms you'll hear from folks is when people think that the insights function is disconnected from the business, or that the insights groups is kind of off running their own research and that maybe their business partners don't really know what to do with it or how to use it or how it's helping them. So I think aligning yourself really closely with your business partners on what their goals are and then laying out how your research or your research agenda can support their goals has been very successful for me internally. And I pushed. I'm like a cutting edge research gal. So I'm always trying to like push out in the bleeding edge of new technologies. And you have to know your client there, because some people are like really into that and think it's really cool. Some people are going to be a little bit more resistant because they're used to more traditional processes.
Yeah, and I think that misalignment's a really interesting piece, because I think that's where a lot of, even on the sales side, people coming in from the outside trying to earn your business, often they have a misunderstanding or they're misaligned with what you're really trying to accomplish. Are there some things that can be done internally within an organization to get better alignment?
Within your own organization?
Yeah, within your own organization.
Yeah, I think the success I've had over the last few years here has been building my agenda around my key stakeholders' goals. Everything I've tried to align or get them aligned to, they can see directly how it's lining up with what they're trying to do. The other thing is I also try to find ways that we can inspire the stakeholders. Ideally, if I could, I would spend the majority of my research dollars uncovering, right? Like learning about things that we can then apply fundamental research on how things work. I love all that kind of stuff because I feel like it pays a lot of dividends and it informs the organization. And I always talk about how I feel like if you're doing your job really well on insight, you're actually developing the gut of the organization. Right? Your job isn't to pass and fail other people's babies, right? That's actually the worst place to be in. It's great when they're passing, but when they're failing, then you're like, you know, the bearer of bad news. But if you can kind of sell to your stakeholders how you're trying to develop their consumer IQ, develop their market IQ, and so that they're living and breathing and being as close to the consumer data as you are, then I feel like you're going to have the ultimate success.
I love that. Now, I did mention sales, so I want to step back and ask maybe a very obvious question, because I think a lot of times we know that the answer lies in the fact that we come in maybe with the wrong agenda. But are there some things that you experience when you're dealing with salespeople that you think are just maybe big mistakes they're making that are not allowing them to really earn your trust and earn your business?
Yeah, I think there's two sales opportunities that I've seen with vendors. And I think one is just kind of what you had mentioned around understanding kind of what your goal is. Because I think depending on the product, like sometimes the sales pitch may always lead with cheaper or faster. And that's not always your objective, right? Like, and in fact, I would say in my case, that's probably 5% of the occasions where I'm like, oh, I just need something like really fast and cheap, right? Like normally for me, maybe it's like know your client, but for me, it's about like quality and depth of learning. So I know that there's a lot of great companies out there and I know they're developing these tools that really just kind of focus on efficiency. But I just feel like that's not always what people are looking for. So there needs to be somewhat of a balance between the two.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. So let's talk about technology, because there's obviously a lot of technology that's influencing the way things are being done in business today. Sometimes it seems like the research world is a little slower moving, but you are pretty progressive in your own way there. So are there some technologies that you're excited about trying that you have not been able to embrace yet, or you're finding some ways to integrate?
So I, like I said, I'm probably an early adopter on new technology. So I've been, you know, running EEG neuro studies for 7 or 8 years now, and I've leaned deep into neurolinguistic studies, leveraging these people that work in this field of neurolinguistics. I've just recently started doing a little bit more with artificial intelligence. I think that's pretty cool. I'm trying to think of something that I haven't tried yet. I think there's a lot of cool stuff coming. I think there's a lot with machine learning that's going to be pretty cool. I'm interested to see how the data from things like like Fitbits and Amazon Echoes and, you know, even things like smart TV and stuff start to provide data and behavioral insights around consumers. I almost think of that as like the next generation of tech. It's like we've went from mail, M-A-I-L surveys to online, which was like a really big leap. And I remember making that and everybody was like, you can't trust the internet. And now mobile is such an active platform. And I'm kind of thinking like, how do we get, what's the next one, right? Is it just your smart TV? Is it Alexa? Is it, you know, your smart watch? And all of these kind of new technologies that we can be tapping into, your refrigerator. You know, people have smart refrigerators now that can tell you when you're out of things. And I'm not sure how research can go there, but what I can tell you is I think people prefer mobile surveys over internet surveys. And I think people probably preferred internet surveys over mail surveys. So I think there's an element of research quality that'll get to being how respondents like to provide data or how they can passively provide data just through their choices, you know, without having to ask them questions that I think will be the future of research. And if anyone has those type of thoughts or technologies right now, reach out to me because I'm definitely interested in those.
We're talking to Teray Schrader, director at Kellogg Company. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Audible Insights is supported by CMix from Critical Mix. CMix is a collaborative new way to create insights from Critical Mix. CMix gives you fast and easy access to survey programming and management, global target audiences and data visualization right at your fingertips, all in one convenient place. Unlike other DIY survey tools, CMix lets you decide how much or how little you want to be involved with your survey project. The Critical Mix team of experts is available to help along every step of the way whenever you need them. Visit cmix.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Audible Insights. I'm your host, Paul Kirch, and we've got Teray Schrader, director at Kellogg Company. Let's jump back in. As an early adopter, I'm sure that you have had your share of taking some risks and trying some new things. Has there been anything that recently that stood out as overhyped or maybe it just wasn't quite ready yet? I mean, I think back to when Google Glasses and other wearables came out, there seemed like so much hype over opportunity there that just kind of failed. Anything else you can think of that's been a little overhyped?
I don't know. I think that, and I don't want to throw any technologies under the bus, I think that some of the self-serve stuff has been a little more difficult to use. I think the idea is pretty interesting with the, even if you think just a very, you know, Survey Monkey and stuff. I think that this idea that you can just kind of jump on a platform and, you know, run your own research real quick can be great. I think it can also go awry because I think there tends to lack to be kind of a guiding principle around, okay, here's how you use it or when you should use it or when you should not use it. It tends to be kind of loosey-goosey. And so I've actually seen some kind of more junior folks like in the organization who maybe have never grown up with like survey design, right? Because that's already been kind of a supplier side deliverable. And so they never really learned the tenets of like order bias and, you know, and so then you kind of let them loose on these platforms that don't have any of those kind of guardrails and you can kind of end up backing yourself into some maybe not great data. So I think there's some things that are out there that maybe could use a little more guardrails or a little more leadership on kind of when you should use them and how you should use them.
Yeah, I think back to when digital cameras became very prevalent, and I have more than one friend that has gone out and they went from a person taking some photographs, the next thing I know they're calling themselves a professional photographer. And it's kind of the same thing with the DIY research world. There's people out there that wear the label researcher, but they have zero experience in survey design, and it has really opened up a Pandora's box of misrepresentation of data and some unreliable results. But at the same time, it's also exposed our industry to some people that may never have been exposed before. So there's some positives come from it, but obviously some risks as well.
Growing up at P&G, they were very rigorous on data quality, right? And so there was a lot of testing on testing and research on research to kind of prove out formats and stuff. We were all afraid of type 1 and type 2 errors, right? And I think that the industry's probably gotten a little bit farther away from that, because I think, like I said, I think most of that's been kind of put onto the shoulders of the suppliers to have that kind of data integrity. And so I feel like there's not a fear as much among the younger generations of getting an error in the data, getting non-reliable data, or getting data that is biased based on how they set it up. And so I think you're right. I think that's a bit of a Pandora's box there, and there's a few contributing factors.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned a little bit about how communication is handled within your organization. I mean, there's a lot of buy-in. I think that's wonderful to hear, because I know not everybody has that opportunity. Let's talk a little bit about how you communicate those insights within your organization. Is there anything special that you have been able to accomplish or you do within your organization that allows you to kind of distribute the results and get buy-in from people?
I find that culture drives a bit of the communication tools. So coming from P&G at the time, and it's probably evolved since then, but it was like the power of the one pager. You know, it was like, if you could write like a really great one pager, and even just the use of Word documents was very prevalent. And then when I moved to Kellogg, it's very much a PowerPoint culture. And so I had to kind of like hone my tool set and my skill set. And I actually was not very good at making like appealing PowerPoint. And I also find here, it's also relatively informal in that a lot of times results and indications and next steps and stuff are just shared via email. Simple enough. So the other thing I would say we're leaning into a bit more here at Kellogg is like visualization of data, whether that be through visual one-pagers or leave behind documents that kind of capture it all in a visually appealing way. And the other way is just videos. As I talked about mobile earlier, and as mobile is allowing us to get quantitative amounts of visual data, whether it's people recording themselves or recording themselves shopping or taking pictures of their or videos of their pantry or an occasion, I found it to be a really powerful tool. We actually did a communications brief with our agency for Cheez-It a couple of weeks ago, and it was heavily, heavily based on just consumer videos. So it was pretty cool to see that come to life.
Yeah, that's really great. And in terms of how you get interaction with the marketing team, anything that stands out there? I mean, is there a level of excitement from the marketing side with what you guys are doing? Is there struggles in getting any kind of buy-in? How does that process work?
I think if you're aligned on your goals, then you shouldn't have too much buy-in problems. I think the most difficult buy-in issues you might have is when you start to get in those spaces where it's a new technology or an unproven technology or different than how they've done it before. And I think sometimes you just got to read your stakeholder there to understand like how comfortable they are with trying new things. But I think from a video standpoint, I would say they're like loving it. It just brings it to life. It's multi-sensory. It's multi-dimensional. There's more and more tools available now that you can, you know, pull all these data clips. You can actually even like run statistics on them based on transcripts and things like that. So it's actually been a pretty cool evolution in how we're acquiring information from a research perspective and also how we're disseminating it within the organization.
As we close this out here, Trey, there are some people listening that you touched on a little bit, but they're struggling with their own organization to get their insights implemented, and they want to be involved as a key in the business decision-making process, but they're struggling with that. Any advice you'd give those folks?
I think insights tends to be an influence role in every organization I've been in, most I know. So we're usually not the decision maker, right? So I think if you follow, you know, there's tons of great books on influence or setting a vision, part of the problem solving point I made earlier, which is you have to make sure everybody sees the problem you're solving as a problem that needs solved. So I think any kind of understanding you can on how to influence, I mean, I can give some of my secrets away. Like I always precede my key stakeholders. And when I say precede, it's like I kind of start to plant like little ideas with folks, right? And like let them think about it a little bit. And then I plant another one. And so especially if it's a big change, I try to work up to it and bring them along with you. I think sometimes it can be challenging because the insights folks are the closest to the data. And so things that we can see so clearly, right, the rest of the organization may be far from. And you have to figure out how to start to leave those breadcrumbs to like bring them closer together. And like I said, I always think of myself as not being like the keeper of data or the holder of information, but as being the person who's developing the organization's gut. Share, 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 share. And so the more you can make sure everyone in your business team or your brand team knows as much as you do, the more that you can make sure you're on the same page, the more that you can develop their gut, like think the better off you'll be in influencing them. I also tell my own reports. I say the proudest I am is when I see my marketing lead or my R&D lead presenting data or talking about research like they ran it, like they know it that well, right? Like they're that involved into it. And I'm like, when you see that happening, like you might feel like, oh, like that's my data. Like I want to own it. But that's the thing. It's like you have to let go of it. You have to let them own it. You have to let them live it. And that's how you're going to have the most powerful influence.
I love it. That is such great advice. Hooray, Schrader, thank you so much for being on Audible Insights.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
Wasn't Teray great? We really appreciate her coming on today and sharing some of her vast experience, giving you some great insights that you can take back to your organization and do a better job of influencing up the food chain like she's been able to do over at Kellogg and her time at Procter & Gamble. Once again, my name is Paul Kirch, host of Audible Insights, and I want to pay a special thanks to the Insights Association. Through this show and other means like the insightsassociation.org, you're going to find a lot of ways that they are advancing the insights and research industries. So we thank them for all their contributions and everything they do. And if you want to learn a little more about me, check out my other show, Boss Academy Radio, at bossacademy.com, where we focus on real business ownership success strategies. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have an amazing day.
Thanks for listening to Audible Insights, a production of the Insights Association. We empower intelligent business decisions through our support of the marketing research and analytics community. Learn more about our advocacy code of standards, education, certification, and the many services we provide to businesses and professionals at insightsassociation.org. And if you'd like to reach out to Paul Kirch directly, email him at paul@websitesandleads.com. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have an insightful day.